This is from the Midwest City Free Baptist Church.
But idolatry, how about that? Is that a fun subject? Idols, okay, you know where this goes, more or less, but or maybe you don't. We'll just wait and see. For today, though, I'd like you to look at Galatians chapter 4 to see how we sort of start this topic. Galatians chapter 4, it looks just about like this. A few verses, starting with verse 7. And so Paul says this. So, I'm kind of coming in the middle of what he's saying. This is what we have to do. So, he's telling them, you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not God's. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to become once more? You want to do that again? You want to go back to that? So you see what he's saying here. You were enslaved by those who by nature are not God. So we'll spend a few weeks looking at this idea, the temptation that we have to serve and to be enslaved to be in bondage to things that are by nature not God's. Even if by our practice, maybe they are God's, but by nature they're not. Just like I could treat you like you're royalty, I could treat you like you're filthy rich, I could treat you like you're among the world's greatest performers or athletes or whatever you want to say, by practice. But there's a good chance, no offense, that by nature you ain't. It's just so, you know, it's what you are, it's what you really are that counts. And these things are by nature not God's. So that is to say that we're going to talk about certain idols. Now, of course, all churchgoers are familiar with the notion that sermons are about idols sometimes, right? I mean, this is kind of one of those things. This is one of those things you might expect to hear when you come to church. Hear about idols and about idolatry. Surely from time to time I come to church and hear about that. And the word, when you hear it, you come to church and hear people talking about idols and idolatry, it's going to evoke certain images, certain things. Like, what do you picture? So talk about idols. What comes to your mind? I bet some of you picture something ancient, something from a world gone by, some old statues or relics or things from a world that no longer exists. Or maybe certain things you might have seen in another part of the world or on National Geographic or something, or, you know, like something that appears to you to be primitive or tribal or something like that. Or some of you are more sophisticated and you've been to church and heard about modern day kind of stuff. So you're thinking about modern vices and you're thinking, yeah, idols, you know, money, power, sex, and those kind of things that are the idols of today. I mean, there are mentions of idols all the time. People talk about idols. You got your teen idols. You got your American idols. And once upon a time, not too long ago, you even had your Billy Idol. I know at least Jeremy remembers him because, if I'm not mistaken, he started singing it this morning. Or did I mishear? Not a bad choice. By the way, Jim, next time, your next karaoke choice, I mean, you could go with... It's not a bad way to go. I mean, look, it's a nice... I won't do that. Well, look, it's always good to... a nice day to start again, I always say. That's a very Christian thing for me to say. Idols everywhere, and not a one worth giving your worship to. So we're going to look at a few of these contemporary things that maybe we don't notice so easily. Things that we're subject to, things we're really tempted toward that are sometimes problematic. Yeah, even for Christian people, even for professing Christians, things that are problematic. You got to beware the very easy temptation, even if sometimes subtle temptation, to chase after things and give them all your worship. So today then we look at these verses as sort of a crash course on just the very bare basics of idolatry. It's pretty clear, if you're a Bible reader, it's pretty clear that from Scripture you get a coherent and unvarnished message about idols, what constitutes them and their danger, and so on. But I'll show you just a few very basic things you can sort of hang today's message on, all right? So, make it simple. just push across a few very simple emphases. And one of them, I'll give you the first one here, is this, you ought to know this, that idols, idolatry itself, it's very easy. I mean, it's something you will just slip right into. It comes naturally to us. It comes naturally. It's just not a thing you have to, you would go out of your way or think, you know, it's not some sophisticated process to get you to a place where you're guilty of this. It's just almost everything around you in life you could easily convert into a thing that you like too much and that takes God's place, and suddenly you've enthroned it. You've put it up on the mantle as the big thing, the main thing. Colossians 3:5, Paul tells the people, he says they should put to death earthly things that they have in their lives that are evil desires. He says greed and covetousness. And then he says, which is idolatry. Think about that. Their greed, their desire for stuff, their lust after certain things, and then they're coveting things other people have. He says, which is? Like, those things are idolatrous. But wait a minute. You don't know what they're after. You don't know what they're greedy for. You don't know what the things are. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to him what the specific things are, if there are any things in this world at all that they're overly wanting too much. That's idolatry. Anything. Doesn't matter. It's something other people have and I want it. And I wish I had it. And I crave it. That's a disordered kind of longing. And if you have that disordered longing for anything, anything that is not God, by nature it's not God. And therefore, he says, you got to watch out. He's talking to Christians here now. He's not talking out to just everybody on the street. Here he's talking to Christians specifically. Of course, everyone on the street is, they're all worshiping things. I mean, that's just the nature of man. We want stuff. It's just, isn't that just who and what we are? To want things so bad that we're just always spending our time and our money, pouring our money and resources and efforts to get more of this. I just need this. This will make me, people will like me. It'll make me feel good about me. It'll fulfill me. You know, wise people who have not read Paul's letters, okay? Wise people who just observe human nature figure this out. Did you know that one of the core tenets of the, if you want to call it this, the gospel of Buddha? All right, you know, Buddha. Did you know that one of the main principles of the guy's whole message was that people want and desire and crave all the things of the world too much, and it makes them suffer. It makes them suffer. They suffer through life wanting everything. That's just something that a wise enough person will observe. You know, anywhere in the world, someone, if they just think about it and just watch people closely, they will notice that. Right? It seems fairly obvious. It's just what we're like. We got this bad habit of taking things. By the way, even good things. Even things that are pretty good things. But we overlove them. We demand of them too much. We demand that they pay off in ways they can't. We ask them to deliver in ways they just can't quite deliver. And we want them in a way that makes it seem like we need them. You know, that's the way kids are all the time, right? Now, you know, when your kids want something, and when you were young, you did the same thing. When they want something like, I don't know, stuff, toys, you know, or clothing, or music, or whatever it is, when a kid wants that stuff bad enough, they say, I need it. I need it. Like it's food. Like it's vital medicine. Like I'll die without it. I'm sick. I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell. Thank you. Who said that? Well, the drummer would say that. Thank you. He's just being true to his percussionist nature. He is by nature not God, but he is by nature a man who likes to pound stuff. To the glory of God. Did you hear him?
Yes.
He was tearing those drums up. You got to use your gifts, man. You got to use them. If I had your gift, I'd go back there. But I won't, because I'll clear this building out if I start. I'll make a joyful noise that you might not find joyful. Nevertheless, shall the hand say to the foot? Am I right? So, Whatever it is, you think, I need it. You don't need it. But when you start to think you need it, that's a sign that you want it too bad. Right? That's a clue to me that I might want that too bad. And if I want it that bad, then maybe it's becoming sort of godlike. Maybe I've exalted it overly too much and I've deified it. And now it's just like that. Because this is the nature of us. So the theologian Calvin, you'll remember him from the Reformation. In his ginormous major work of his life, the Institutes, he described this in a sort of famous passage, actually. He says that the human mind and heart, he says, the human mind is like a perpetual factory or forge for idols. We take whatever materials in the world and we're master idol craftsmen. We're just making idols out of them all the time. And he goes on to explain what he means by it. He says, quote, the human mind, stuffed as it is with presumptuous rashness, dares to imagine a God suited to its own capacity. As it labors under dullness and is sunk in the grossest ignorance, it substitutes vanity and empty phantom in the place of God. The God whom man has thus conceived inwardly, he attempts to embody outwardly. The mind in this way conceives the idol, and the hand gives it birth. In other words, you form it in your mind, this thing that you imagine is your great fulfillment, and then what you do is you go about busying yourself to make it so. So you spend your money, your time, it's what you're thinking about all the time, and you're trying to bring it about. In that way, you're kind of fashioning an idol. Right? It's sort of like, in the workshop of your mind and with your money and your time and all that, you're trying to bring it about. So a contemporary pastor explains this. And Tim Keller says about this quote, he says, the human heart, we see, is like an idol factory that will take good things, like a successful career, love, material possessions, even family, and turn them into ultimate things. Our hearts deify them and make them the very center of our lives because we think that they can give us significance and security, safety and fulfillment if we can just attain them. So what he's saying is good things in life that you can enjoy, God gave you those things, you can be thankful for those things, and you can have those things, but our tendency, craftsmen that we are, is to take them, dress them up, put the crown on them, set them in the grand throne. Almost like in a room, you know, like some rooms have idols in them. There are still people. By the way, lest you think that old world idolatry is not a thing anymore. No, there are millions, and I mean millions of people in the world today that still practice a kind of worship that if you see it up close, you will think that you are looking at old world primitive style idolatry, the way that you probably wouldn't encounter it here or in this culture, but you will see it in other places. You will see it and it will be very obvious. In fact, I was just listening the other day, a meeting, this was at SNU, and a new person that they've hired, a new faculty person, was talking to the group and saying she grew up in India and she grew up in a Hindu home and they moved to the States. And then she became a Christian, but then even as a grown, as a sort of young adult, she says she'd go to her parents' house, in high school, or she'd bring friends over, and a room in their house, right next to her bedroom, would still be, at all times, they called it the puja room, it's their word for worship, and these kind of like idols, she said these idols, these physical, would be in that room, candles burning and offerings to them, all 24 hours a day. She says, this was my house. This is just next to my room. My parents constantly practicing a form of worship that you might have thought people don't practice anymore. You might have thought that's just things I read about sort of in an ancient context. But not so. Travel overseas, you will see just the most blatant forms of it. But we're no better in this sense that we're all chasing the wrong things. And either way, God gets dethroned. He gets replaced. He gets demoted. So the idols then, they're at every turn, and we're seeking this kind of fulfillment. This is sort of the other main principle. It's in vain. You heard what he says, what Paul says to them. This is foolish. This is vanity. And then the Calvin's quote, it says the same thing. Vain things. I mean, vain means what? Meaningless. Just empty. There's just nothing there. And in fact, when you devote all your time to those things and they don't pay off, what you end up with is suffering. In this sense, the Buddha was actually onto something. His cure for it, I think his cure is mistaken. He's absent some revelation that he needed at that point. His cure was basically a lot of spiritual disciplines and exercises and basically moralism. And probably it's such a hard road to get there that you probably have to join a monastery to do it. So he found a monastery. You're going to have to just leave the world behind. That was the solution. But his diagnosis is he's onto something with the diagnosis. Suffering happens. Listen to the Psalms. So David says in Psalm 16, he says, those who chase other gods will suffer more and more. They're just going to suffer. This road is not a road to happiness. And so repeatedly and time and again, the prophets, you read the prophets and they're talking about the various gods and the idols, and they're just incapable of doing anything for us. That same, there's a passage actually, sort of a parallel passage in two Psalms, Psalm 115 and Psalm 135. Read them both and you'll see a passage that's almost identical describing the idols of silver and gold. And it says they have eyes that can't see, ears that can't hear, their mouths say nothing. And one songwriter, I remember, he says that those idols, they've got the nerves that can't wince at the pain you feel. They can't empathize. They have no understanding of what you're really going through and how they might be able to help you. They can't help you. They are nothing. Right? As the prophet says, a guy takes a piece of wood, you know, and he makes this thing, and then he sets it and he worships it. Now, you may say, well, that sounds a little bit mocking. It's designed to show you, though, the utter futility of this. And you say, well, I'm glad we don't practice those primitive things. But you do, if you don't watch out. Because you take the currency. And what is the currency? Well, it's in physical form. It's just something that came off of a mint somewhere. I mean, it's paper that was printed someplace. Somebody consigned value to it. And you can't get your hands on enough of it. And you love it. And you crave it. And you worship it. So isn't that sort of silly too? That's the idea. These idols of ours will just bring us to misery. There was an old song, a Christian artist years ago, I really like this refrain. In the song he would say, my gods won't let me sleep. They're just keeping me up all night long, my gods. Because some of the gods, of course, are really more dastardly than others. They're really leading you down the wrong path. And they cost you a lot, and they just don't give you what you wanted. So for a Christian, you want to keep going back? Spurgeon said to his massive flock of Christians, he talking about returning to the idols of the sin they walked away from, and he says of the idol, has it not cost thee enough already? Burned child, wilt thou play again with the fire? But inasmuch as it never did give thee what it promised to bestow, but deluded thee with lies, be not a second time ensnared. Be free. Be free. As Paul said, why you want to wear that chain again? Those gods enslaved you, made you run around for no good reason. You spun your wheels to get what you thought would fix you. And in the end, you're not at all satisfied. By the way, even the people who keep getting those things, have you noticed that the people who actually attain large amounts of the things that they chase, the things that are most important, like money. I mean, we all know that the filthy, filthy rich of the world are among the most happy and fulfilled individuals, are they not? Well, how can that be? You chase, you pursue, you want, you need, you get happy. Now I'm happy. Just doesn't work out. People attain what they think they wanted, Okay, well, how about not that? How about the people who want fame? I want to be big time. I want everyone to know me. I want to be that person. Everyone wants my autograph, and they flock to me, and I got an entourage, and I'm famous. Of course, those people who worked and sweated and went after it with everything, some of them compromised themselves in ways that racks them with guilt to get what they have. Why, they're very fulfilled people, are they not? Again, you think the suicide rate's lower among the wealthy and the people who achieve fame? My friends, it's higher per capita. No, restless souls. These gods don't pay off. It's quite the opposite. And of course, the biblical teaching is just not ambiguous at all. We don't have to waver here. The text doesn't waver. This is just utterly forbidden. To the outside world, it says, be free. You can be free. But to the believer, the word is more harsh. We ought to know better than to go back to it. So it's not shy about saying, I mean, by the way, this is one of the Ten Commandments, isn't it? No other gods. Pretty clear, God never takes this sort of thing lightly. The people, Israel, of course, they just had this bad habit, didn't they? Running back. You build the Asherah pole, dumb Israelites start showing up to it. What's wrong with them? The prophets would say, what's wrong with you people? Look, what are you, blind? This is just what we are. We don't watch out. You got to be vigilant. So Paul reminds the Corinthians then, 1 Corinthians 10, of the judgment that fell on Israel. How over and over they just get the smite down. It's a word I just made up, by the way. I feel like it's an operable term in Christian usage. He put the smite down on them. He did it over and over. Paul says to the Corinthians, he says, God was not pleased with them much of the time. Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. And these things, he says, occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. Do not be idolaters, he says, as some of them were. Later in verse 14, the command is clear. He says, therefore, my friends, flee from idolatry. I speak to you as sensible people, he says. Judge for yourselves what I'm saying. I like that because it's almost as if he's saying, come on, just use your head here. You know I'm right. Right? I mean, do I really have to go too far out of my way to convince you of this? I'm just reminding you of what you really know. God, we are told, has a certain kind of jealousy. Not the petty kind that you and I are guilty of quite regularly, I would presume. No, God has a kind of jealousy that the Hebrew word doesn't have the petty connotations. It means there's a sort of energized, emphatic zeal that he has to keep you from running off and wasting your worship and throwing it away in the dumbest way possible on stuff that is not even remotely like a God.
Say whatever things are lovely, whatever things are true, whatever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, let us think upon these things. Let God be true and every man a liar. And that is what it comes down to.